I'm here with Daniel Libskind to discuss his exhibition at the Barbican Centre. Daniel, one thing I wanted to ask you was about the connection in your work between music, which obviously you studied, and the way you compose your buildings, the way you actually literally conceive them and compose them.
Well, music is an integral part of architecture. Even on the most obvious level, the acoustics of a building give a tremendous sense of the kind of space you're in. And every city has its own sound, so to speak. You know that you're in London when you land here, you know you're in New York, you know you're in Shanghai. And I think that has always been the tradition of architecture, that when the music, so to speak, ends, architecture is the music itself, it's the continuity of music in space. And, of course, mathematics and numbers and all those things have always been conceived as musical. And the very notion of harmony, both in space and in the cosmos, is rooted on the relationship between space, architecture, and the world we live in.
You mentioned earlier in your talk about connections and how you bring in people and the way you work with that. And there seems to be a big link between the way you worked with absence in the Jewish Museum and the Ground Zero site. Can we talk a little bit about dealing with these very sensitive areas and the way, again, that you deal very specifically with voids and absence?
Well, very often the things that are important in architecture are the things that are physically not there. The absence of the people who perished at 9/11 on Ground Zero, and yet they are permanently there. They will forever be there. The Jewish dimension of Berlin, which has been eradicated in the horrible history of the 20th century, is permanently there, and yet the spiritual carriers are not there. So the space has to do something. The space has to deal with the trauma. Architecture has to deal with tragedy, not only with the obvious, and it has to bring the sense of history into a future which is hopeful and communicative, and in that sense it has to touch at the heart and soul of a person, not just their feet.
I also wanted to talk a little bit about your studio. I've obviously moved your studio now from Berlin to New York. You're working on a massive project. It's going to be 10 years. How has that been for you? Has it changed your working methods in any way?
No, it hasn't changed my methods, but of course, every place you are has a big impact on you, and being back in New York is a wonderful thing. Our studio is right in Lower Manhattan, overlooking Ground Zero on one side, but also looking at the incredible Lower Manhattan skyline with Trinity Church and all those great buildings, and seeing the harbor in which I arrived as an immigrant to New York, just to the south. So it's a very special, very moving, and very beautiful place to be in.
Can we talk also about the symbolic features of your conception for Ground Zero, because the height of it is symbolic, many of the areas that you've conceived around it is very important as well. Can we just talk about that?
Well, you know, people talk about symbols as if there's something detached from life, but to me the Statue of Liberty is not a trinket on a keychain or something, you know, a paperweight. It's a true thing that I encountered arriving as an immigrant to America, and it is a true flame of freedom that cannot be appropriated by any political party. It belongs to all Americans and all free people. It talks about liberties, about the ability to believe in what you believe, practice your religion, vote freely, make yourself into someone you want to be. And that's the greatness of America and the greatness of the liberties that the modern world often takes for granted. And that's what I wanted to build into the project. I wanted to make sure that the project is not just based on infrastructure and on the pragmatics, which of course it has to be, but that it shines with something that is truly inspiring and memorable to all of us.
So people will absolutely have the experience
absolutely
of that site.
Of course. Well,
of
if you think
regeneration of the site.
You will, because if you think that you know, all of Manhattan is just a kind of a series of straight lines, but the Ground Zero is surrounded by, embraced by a circle of buildings which spiral upwards to the Freedom Tower and really kind of create on an urban scale the torch of liberty around that memorial site. And I think that's very important, both in terms of remembering what 9/11 means for the future of the world, but also being inspired by the resolve to answer these terrorist attacks in a creative way, in an optimistic way, in a way that asserts the courage of liberties in face of threats by totalitarian regimes.
I'd like to talk about Studio Violin Mallorca with you, because it's a different project from many of your others, a much smaller scale, a more
intimate
scale.
Well, it's the smallest project I've ever made. It's, 250 square meters or something, a very low-cost budget. And it's a kind of a house and a studio for an artist who lives in Mallorca, and she asked me to do something for her studio and then where she can display her work and where she can meditate and invite her friends. And It was a wonderful assignment because I've never made anything that I didn't have to discuss, you know, with huge agencies and politicians and the great public. It was just a very modest, small house. But again, I think it's a wonderful project because it's part of the Mallorca landscape and part of the feeling of the Mediterranean light. And it's even related historically to Mallorca.
It's very much about light, and light is so important for all your works. But also what's lovely here in the exhibition, we see your drawings as well, the working drawings for the project. Can we talk a little bit about that? Because they're very expressive. You do have this way of conceiving and drawing and working with lines.
I think a drawing is very important. As Michelangelo said, architecture is drawing. You have to be able to draw. If you just use your computer to generate funny shapes, you don't produce architecture, you produce consumer objects. So drawing has always been, you know, you can tell a drawing by Christopher Wren, you can tell a drawing by Inigo Jones, you can tell great architects by the hand as it is connected to the eye and to the future construction. And of course, that's what I believe in. It's a very traditional aspect. I still draw by hand and I still sketch, and that's part of the pleasures and the beauties of creating buildings.
Do you have your own computer yet? You notoriously didn't have
you
your own computer,
well,
did
we,
you?
We have a lot of computers in our office, but I don't use one, actually. I am a very old-fashioned architect. I still use a ruler and a plumb line and a sketchbook and a pencil. And architecture is really not about the tools you use, but it's about the spirit of a space and spirit of a place and about the people who are part of it. And that's the cultural aspect of architecture. It's not just production of machinery.
I think a very interesting question that was brought up as well earlier was about compromise. Now, with a huge project like Ground Zero, are there things that you wouldn't compromise on? And are there things, I mean, you mentioned that with the Jewish Museum, there was an enormous amount of compromise, but in the end, that wasn't obvious. What you had was a magnificent space.
Well, you can only compromise if you have an idea. If you have no ideas, there's no compromises. And compromise is a dirty word in architecture, but everywhere else, in politics, in the United Nations, everywhere in the world, we see compromise as a very positive word. And it's a good word. Negotiating through the complexity of public space does require compromise. Of course, you have to have principles on which compromise can be judged. And if I did not have very powerful principles, which really are the scheme, I would not be able to negotiate with anybody. And those principles I've maintained. The project continues to have the integrity that it has from the very beginning. And it's on course, and it's exactly what the public has seen and voted for.
I'd just like to ask you about the materials you use. Very new materials, very dramatic materials, reflecting light, aging in a certain way, using titanium, zinc, all these materials. Can we talk about that?
Well, of course, materials are an extremely important part of architecture because you have to make a building that really stands up, that is beautiful to look at, that is ecologically responsible, that will look good not only in a little picture in a magazine, but will be truly good in life. And for that, you have to have attitude to materials. But my attitude is that it's not the cost of materials that drives a building. It's not the fancy marbles or the fancy glass facades that we make that are important, but it's materials that are perhaps very simple but very robust, very traditional or very contemporary, like concrete or glass, but used in a way that is expressive and that tells a story. Because unless architecture can tell a story, it is only telling a story about how it was made and how much it cost.
Now, I believe you've also thought a great deal about defacement of buildings. I know that was certainly true in your considerations of the Jewish Museum, putting some kind of anti-resistant graffiti type area on it.
I think what protects buildings from graffiti is their precision and their spirit. It's not what you coat them with. And I'm very thrilled that in Berlin so far no one has thought of doing it because the building has its own presence on the street, which people respect, even kids who would otherwise graffiti a building or a flat wall. And in that sense, I think a building has to have an integrity that goes beyond just the surface look of a building.
And finally, your Bronx project, because that's something that is interesting in terms of a community which have a very particular identity.
Well, I believe in social housing, and I believe in not just in the big projects that resonate as public projects, but in housing and in the way people live. I'm also involved in a number of other housing projects in New York, and that's really part of architecture, too. It's not just museums and and important sites, but the everyday life is as important to address with great architecture. Just because these are low-cost projects doesn't mean that they should be second-rate projects. That's where the creativity is even more necessary. It's not perhaps a trick to do a very expensive project for a very wealthy client somewhere on an island, but it is important to do something in the midst of a city which is tightly controlled by very, very low budget and yet gives people something inspiring and something that makes their life beautiful.